When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
This week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make smart choices about your financial life. But first, here's my Glinkonomics report for the week. June's NAHB Wells Fargo Housing Market Index of 59 blew analysts' expectations out of the water. Forecasts had pegged the number for June at 55, which would have been a 1-point increase over May's number. Pretty good. Instead, the HMI increased by 5 points, which was enough to match its September 2014 level. That month set a high watermark as the only other time since 2005, 10 years ago, that the HMI reached 59. The HMI is based on survey responses from home builders asked to gauge their current perceptions and future predictions for single-family home sales. Any reading over 50 indicates that the majority of home builders view market conditions as favorable for the next 6 months. According to NAHB's chief economist David Crow, June's increase was spurred in part by some of the highest readings in home builders' current and future sales expectations for single-family homes since prior to the housing market crash in 2006. But he also noted the builders remain wary of buyer constraints, right? Loans, which is a nod to some of the stagnant job numbers we've also seen. While keeping that caveat in mind, it's good to see that market conditions look favorable for the rest of the year. But we'll have to see how that actually plays out. Okay, let's get on with the rest of today's show. My guest this week is Darren Bloomquist. He's the vice president of Realty Track, which just put out a new report on zombie foreclosures. As you may remember, these are properties that are in foreclosure. They've been vacated by the property owner prior to the foreclosure being completed. And they might be vacant for years before that foreclosure gets to completion. Now, that can be a major headache for the bank holding the mortgage on the property because vacant homes have a tendency to quickly fall into disrepair. Hello, mold, which means that the home might lose value, probably will lose value, and therefore return less than the bank's investment when it's finally sold to a new owner. This could all have been fixed if the bank would just speed up the foreclosure process, but in some states they haven't been able to. They're judicial foreclosure states, and in other states, well, that's just on the bank. More about that in our interview. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Then before we wrap up for this week, I want to remind everyone about the Department of Housing and Urban Development's Neighborhood Stabilization Program. Free money, buy a house. That's what you have to remember, and it could be a very helpful tool for low to middle income prospective home buyers who are willing to buy a previously foreclosed property. Okay, that's this week's lineup. Let's dig in and get started. So Darren Bloomquist is back with us to revisit a topic he and I discussed back in February of this year, zombie foreclosures. Now here's a quick refresher on what qualifies as a zombie foreclosure. These are homes that have been vacated by the homeowner after the foreclosure process has already begun. So during the foreclosure process, which we all know can take up to several years in certain cases and in certain states, the property gets little, if any, attention and can fall into a zombie-like state of disrepair. Neighbors hate it. According to Realty Track, where Darren is the vice president, zombie foreclosures sell on average for 22% less than owner-occupied foreclosures. So the banks have a huge incentive to keep homeowners in a property until the foreclosure is completed. And that's why they used to pay people to do that. And investors should see these properties as especially well-priced opportunities, assuming, of course, that they haven't fallen too far into disrepair. That just portends a huge recovery bill. Darren has all the stats for any investors looking to capitalize on zombortunities. Wow, that's a good pun. In the foreclosure pipeline. Welcome back to the show, Darren.
Thanks, Elise. And I can't take responsibility for that that new word being coined.
Zombertunities. My college freshman would love it. All right, to the report at hand. The Realty Track Zombie Foreclosure Report came out for the second quarter of 2015. So how have the numbers changed since we last had this conversation 3 months ago?
Sure. When we look at the nationwide numbers, the zombie foreclosures, these vacant, abandoned foreclosures, are down nationwide from the previous quarter, which is when we last talked. We saw 127,000 properties nationwide that fit this category of zombie foreclosures as of the middle of the second quarter of 2015. Compared to the previous quarter, when we look back to the first quarter, it's down 11%, and it's down 10% from a year ago. So those numbers are going down nationwide as more and more, there's two reasons for that, basically. There's more areas where foreclosures are continuing to decrease, so there's just fewer opportunities for these zombie foreclosures to pop up. And then the second reason is we are seeing states and counties and other local governments take on these zombie foreclosures, and we're seeing some of those policy efforts actually have an impact and reduce the number of zombie foreclosures, at least in some markets.
So I'm still on this number that 24% of all foreclosures, there's a little bit more than 500,000 foreclosures or homes in foreclosure process of foreclosure. A quarter of those are these zombies where they've not gotten any attention. They could have been sitting there vacant for a couple of years. They need a tremendous amount of work. I mean, that's a little bit scary when we've seen a lot of recovery and homes just get snapped up.
Yeah, these are the homes that have been left behind in the recovery, I think. And interestingly, I'm glad you pointed out that 24%. That number has come up. Even though the raw number of zombie foreclosures is down, they are a higher percentage of all foreclosures. A year ago, it was 20%, and now we're at 24%. And so what's happening is the properties that are still lingering in foreclosure are the ones that are more likely to be zombies nowadays because it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They've been there for so long, it's more likely the homeowner has left and moved on and the property is vacant.
So we've got the highest rates of zombie foreclosures in states like New Jersey, Florida, and New York. At least New Jersey and New York are judicial foreclosure states, so that goes through just a long process. And we've seen homes in those markets, I want to say they've been in foreclosure 2, 3, 4 years, some of them. Is that right?
Yeah, the average time and the average time to foreclose had been going down a little bit in New York, mm-hmm. but it spiked back up in the first quarter. The average time is a whopping 1,475
wow.
days, which is over 4 years, and that's the average.
Yeah,
we hear from local agents that definitely over 5 years is not necessarily out of question with some of the properties that they're seeing that have sat in foreclosure for a long time.
Well,
and New Jersey is second place with they're more like 3 years, between 900 and 1,000 days on average to complete a foreclosure there in New Jersey, but it's the second highest of any state.
What's going on with Florida? Because I didn't think Florida was a judicial foreclosure state.
It actually is judicial foreclosure, but even though it feels a little bit differently because it's very similar to some of the other states in terms of the patterns that we saw during the housing crisis, some of the non-judicial states, but it is judicial. The average time to foreclose there is over 900 days. It's number 4 in the country. Hawaii is stuck in there in between. We just don't see a lot of foreclosure activity in Hawaii. But suffice to say, the one good sign in Florida that's different than New Jersey and New York is we're actually seeing these zombie foreclosures decrease pretty dramatically from a year ago. We're down 43%. In terms of the total number of these zombie foreclosures, but it's still a fairly high percentage. 26% of all foreclosures in Florida are these owner vacated foreclosures. So there's still a high percentage of them, but the numbers are going down there. I attribute some of that to the fact that the legislature in Florida enacted a foreclosure fast track legislation a couple of years ago that allows lenders to push through vacant foreclosures faster, and that seems to be having an impact.
So one of the things that strikes me as pretty obvious is if you've got a house that's taking 3 years or 4 years or 5 years to get through foreclosure and you're in a state like Florida, where the owner has left, and now you've got a lot of hot, humid weather, are those houses even going to be livable anymore? I mean, you've got to have mold growing basically everywhere. And when we talk about, you know, having enough cash on hand to redo it, are we just talking about gutting these houses, taking them to the ground, so basically all that's left is land value? Even in places like, you know, New York or Chicago or Dallas, you know, you have summers over the course of 3 years. You're going to have three hot and humid summers where I don't think anybody's turning on the air conditioning.
Yes, these houses are in bad shape after 3 or 4 years of sitting through the harsh winters in some cases, or the muggy summers in other cases. And when in talking to folks, these are not the irony is that if the banks had pushed these through and been able to foreclose on them faster, in say 6 months or a year, they would have been in much better condition and would have sold at a much higher price point. Now, 3 or 4 years later, they are in much worse condition on top of the environmental damage and deterioration of the properties. In some cases, you have these properties are targets for vandals. The copper wiring, the copper piping has been removed. And so these are in bad shape. And really, a lot of them, not every single one, but a lot of them are in bad shape and are going to be selling at highly discounted prices because of that, unless the bank wants to sink in quite a bit of capital to rehab the property.
Well, they're not in the business of rehabbing properties, right? We're not going to see banks step in there. So what's interesting on the report was this average market value of the owner-vacated zombie foreclosure. In the second quarter, it was about $195,000, almost $196,000. It's 78%. The average market value of owner-occupied foreclosures, which is $251,000 and change. But that number is a little bit off, right? Because if you're talking about a house that's got mold all over it and is in terrible shape, it's going to take a whole lot more than $50,000 to straighten that thing out. So yeah. I know that that's probably average, so you've got some below and some higher, but what are you guys seeing in terms of, you know, worst case scenarios? Are these banks actually waking up to the idea they just have to let these properties go? And is anybody running into that 5-year foreclosure timetable issue where you've taken a property back, you've got to turn it over and get rid of it, typically within 5 years?
Yeah, those are great questions. I love them. So on the first issue, the 78% of market value, that's really based on, that's more telling you about the location of these properties and the condition. And so the location of these zombies tend, unfortunately, to be in areas that are already somewhat depressed in terms of home prices. But then if they're, this is an automated valuation model, it's called, to estimate the value of the property. It's probably, in fact, I'm sure it's not taking into account very specific property conditions such as mold.
Sure.
And so that's going to, you know, the 78% is just based on that property's location, what other properties in the area are selling for. If you add on a bad conditioned property, that's going to be an even bigger hit on the value of that home for that case. And then to the question about the 5-year timeframes, I think we are starting, that's, I think, one reason we're actually starting to see these zombie foreclosures go down is because the banks have been forestalling and for a variety of reasons not completing the foreclosure process on some of these zombie foreclosures. But now they need to, otherwise they're going to go past that statute of limitations in some cases.
Right.
At 5 years in Florida, I believe it's 6 years in New Jersey. And so they're going ahead and pushing these through and foreclosing on them and taking them back, which is helping to reduce, at least in places like Florida and Illinois as well, the number of these zombie foreclosures.
Did you in the numbers count any of the HUD homes?
Yes, those would be included. I mean, we're looking at any property that is in the foreclosure process. Now, a zombie is specifically not, it's not a HUD home because we're not counting those that have been repossessed by the lender at that point and, for instance, taken back by HUD. At that point, our assumption is the bank is going to at least maintain the property to a certain level and eventually sell it once they repossess the property. These 127,000 specifically zombie foreclosures, haven't been taken back by the bank yet. They're still in that limbo where the homeowner technically owns the property, but they've left, and the foreclosure process has started. And so nobody is really taking responsibility for maintaining and updating the property.
Crazy. This is just craziness that we're still facing this 8 years after the housing crisis happened. And it's it's craziness. But a good opportunity for investors. Darren, thank you. That was really helpful, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Elise. It's great to talk about.
Darren Blomquist is vice president at Realty Track. He's a frequent contributor to the show. Darren, are you going to NAREI this year, National Association of Real Estate Editors?
Yeah, I'm absolutely going to be there. I guess that's coming up in a couple weeks already.
I know. So. It's like the
actually
last...
next at the end of next week.
Yeah, right? I think the end of next week, the third week of June. So, well, I will see you in person there. Thank you again for being on the show. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is still providing funding under the National Neighborhood Stabilization Program to help sell previously foreclosed properties to homebuyers. One of those could be you. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Real Estate Minute. So buying a home is currently cheaper than renting. And I say that generally speaking, you ought to be so careful about neighborhood and interest rate and all the rest. But if you're renting because you can't afford a down payment, you're actually paying more for your housing than you would have if you could get over that down payment hump. That's where HUD's Neighborhood Stabilization Program might be able to help you. For anyone earning less than 120% of an area's median income, there may be funding available to offset the cost of a down payment on a previously foreclosed property. Here in Chicago, I just heard about someone who was able to buy a gut rehab developed in partnership with the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative after receiving $35,000 free money, buy a house, under the NSP guidelines to bridge the gap between the cost of the home and the amount for which she was approved by her mortgage lender. Let's be clear, this isn't a strategy that will work for everyone. But if you're able to qualify for assistance, that's the free money part, and are willing to look at homes in neighborhoods where foreclosures have been rampant, that's the buy a house part, you might find that you're a lot closer to affording a home purchase than you thought you were. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and as always, a huge thank you to my guest, Darren Blomquist, for joining us. If there was anything else you missed, don't worry. You can find the show notes to this episode at thinklink.com. That's thinklink.com. If you're new to the show, please be sure to subscribe. And if you're a regular listener and haven't already done so, please consider giving the show a rating or review on iTunes. And you can do that by searching for the Elise Glink Show in the podcast section of iTunes. This helps the show get discovered by new people. And I'm going to throw in another promo for my Monday Morning Marketing podcast. This is a new experiment that I'm doing. And if you own a small business, or a medium or a large business, and you have other friends in that business, and you are trying to figure out how to do better with marketing and social media and digital things, we're the people that you want to talk to. So my friend John Byrne and I get together once a week. We dissect what we're seeing online and in the media, and we put it all together in a podcast for you. It's called Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne, and I hope you'll tune in. This brings us to the end of another episode of The Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great one.